Welcome to the next edition of Business Law Focus. Great having you with us. And it's a pleasure to welcome Michael Hewson back to the show. He's the founder and director of Graphene Economics, which he founded, I think, back in 2017, if memory serves, Michael. But obviously, you've got a niche there as a specialist economics-focused African transfer pricing firm. And as we speak today, transfer pricing remains a very hot topic. In October, the Minister of Finance introduced the global market minimum tax bill for South Africa, which was quite significant. And obviously, we have the OECD coming in with Pillar 2, which is very significant in the transfer pricing space in South Africa, obviously ensuring that our legislation keeps up with that. I know you also recently had an annual Africa Transfer Pricing Summit. And then we also just want to discuss about what to look forward to in 2025 when it comes to transfer pricing. So thanks for joining us.
Good day, Evan. It's wonderful to speak to you again, and good day to the listeners as well.
So let's start with the Minister of Finance and the new bill. What should big – I mean, this is big business that we're talking about. I think it's a $750 million businesses, right? What should businesses expect, or multinational businesses?
Yes, Evan, you're right. It does apply to large businesses, those that have consolidated annual revenue exceeding 750 million euros and above.
Yeah,
and these group entities, they are going to need to ensure that they are paying at least 15% minimum tax in each jurisdiction in which they operate. And if not, then there will be top-up taxes in one or other entities in the value chain and the group structure. So what's going to be really important is that businesses assess in each jurisdiction where they operate what their effective tax rate is. And there's various things that pull the tax rate down. The one is if there's a low corporate tax rate. Mm. The other one is if there's incentives tax incentives that they've been benefiting from, that could mean that their effective tax rate is lower. So what we're finding is a number of jurisdictions that typically had lower tax rates, they have over the last couple of years actually been looking to step up their tax rates to ensure that they're not losing out on levying tax and just having tax derived from profits earned in that market being taxed in another country. So we see Dubai, for example, recently introducing a corporate tax rate of 15%, and other countries following suit as well. What we're finding is that companies, because in South Africa, the rules apply with effect from January 2024. So these very large multinationals, they are having to go to great lengths to evaluate their operations in the various countries. And you can imagine how complex it is that they need to obtain information for lots of extra data points. And there's a lot of work that is having to go in to evaluate, is there additional tax that's needed to be paid? Now, the actual impact is most businesses that we've been talking to are not expecting at the end of the day that they're going to need to land up paying extra top-up tax, because in many cases, the effective tax rate is above 15%. Sweet. But it does mean there's a lot of work that needs to go into financial systems and other calculations to be able to show that is the case.
And of course, this word transfer pricing that we're throwing around is becoming, it is very complex. It's been difficult to pin down. But of course, it refers to the pricing of goods, services, and intangible assets transferred between divisions, subsidiaries, even related entities within that same multinational entity. So the complexity is myriad. And then you have to determine how the profits are allocated, which you've just mentioned here, and the legislation coming through, and also across different countries and jurisdictions. And I mean, Michael, I suppose if you get this wrong, there are going to be significant tax implications, right?
Absolutely. And the penalties for getting this wrong in many countries are very, very high. It was viewed historically that transfer pricing involves companies shifting profits to low tax jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, a number of the transfer pricing controversy matters that we work on, they involve higher tax jurisdictions. So it's not limited to just low tax jurisdictions. And it often arises because of different views as to what an arm's length price should be for an intercompany transaction. In some cases, we get a revenue authority on one side of the transaction saying the price is too low, and on the other side, the revenue authority saying the price is too high. Yeah. So in those cases, it doesn't really matter what the price is. There will be controversy one way or another. And I think you touched on a couple of interesting points. the nature of these transactions. I mean, if I say to you, Evan, you know, what is this product or this service worth? You might have a view as to what it's worth in your world or in your business, but to someone else, because of demand and supply in that other market or where they are in terms of their business strategy, it might attach a higher or a lower value. So sometimes there are these challenges and conundrums. So looking at the economic factors, looking at the commercial factors, and trying to determine what would an independent third party in similar circumstances, you know, be willing to pay or sell the product for, that can be difficult. You then layer on, you know, the digitization of the global economy. That makes it really interesting. Just about every industry that we deal with, you know, that they're introducing platforms, they're introducing, you know, more technology to drive things forward. And technology changes the contributions of parties towards value creation. So how do you price in the contribution of that value? How do you work out how valuable one platform is compared to another platform? So those are just some of the things that make it particularly interesting to determine this concept of an arm's length price.
And we mentioned the 13th Annual Africa Transfer Pricing Summit. You were one of the speakers. These topics all came up, right? And I mean, I know I was keeping an eye on it, and things like climate change also, and transfer pricing was one of the themes, right?
Yeah, you're right. There were a host of different topics, and the South African Institute of Tax Practitioners, they run a brilliant conference every year, around September, October, and it focuses on these aspects of transfer pricing. One of the particular topics that I was looking at for that event was looking at the control risk framework. And that's a very important topic, because just from an economic point of view, that there's this understanding and appreciation that a company that takes on higher risk would expect a higher level of profitability.
Yeah.
Now, when you're looking at cross value chains, global value chains, and within multinational groups, you've got to then see, well, what's the extent of the return or profit that the different participants or the different entities in the group should earn? And you've got to look at the risks, which party is taking on the various risks. And now to understand that, it's a case of not just legally taking on risks, but it's who's managing the risk. Because if one entity is legally just taking on the risk, but the risk is being managed by people in another entity, the principle from a transfer pricing point of view is that risk or the potential benefit from that risk should be then looked to be shared between the parties. So understanding the control risk framework, the contributions of people in relation to the risks assumed, that's really important. Now, you know, just again, bringing it to the complex myriad of considerations. If we think back to COVID, for example, we had some countries that introduced very strict regulations, and it was difficult. In South Africa, you know, we couldn't leave our houses, and it was difficult to move things around. Other countries did not have the strict lockdown. You know, even some neighboring countries. So that just goes to show that sometimes that there's risks that are assumed in one country or that materialize in one country, but maybe not in a neighboring country.
Yeah.
And understanding how these different risks play out or impact different entities is really important. So it's these sort of topics that was discussed at that particular summit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, critical that we get ahead of this as corporate, you know, corporate SA. And now when it comes to, we mentioned the complexity, you mentioned the tax controversy, we've now got new changes coming through. And one of the bits of research that I've seen that Graphene recently did and came past my desk is the importance of understanding the mechanics of a business. I would assume with all these complexities happening, all these subsidiaries, all these new tax rules, and as you say, control risks, you know, and the subtleties of getting around and understanding that and ensuring that you comply. Understanding that business is becoming so critical, right? And it's been a bit of a lacuna in some respects that you only get to see, you know, from the outside. Are you finding that you are managing to get closer to the businesses, or businesses beginning to understand the need for that, or we still got a bit of work to do?
Yeah, I think more and more businesses are realizing that the need for this. We're also seeing at the more senior levels, at CFO level, C-suite level, that there's more much greater appreciation than there was in the past for the need to consider various tax implications and considerations upfront. And we certainly find that that's to the extent we are able to go and spend time at our clients' businesses, and many of our clients are very open to this. We can better understand the business. We can better understand the business strategy. We can better understand the objectives for them that they're trying to achieve. And all of that has an implication. So when you're thinking about a value chain, for example, and you're thinking about a group that's entering into a particular market, often there's initial startup losses, for example. The question is, well, who should incur those extra costs? Who should incur those losses? Well, in some cases, it would be the in-country entity. In other cases, it might be the head office entity that's made the decision to say we want to enter into another market because it's going to benefit our other group entities. So the more we get to appreciate the broader considerations the business is making, the better. And, you know, I'll just use an example briefly, Evan, of if you think about, businesses, they're all different. I mean, think of hamburger chains. If you think of McDonald's, you think of Spur. Understanding the value drivers behind those different businesses, they're quite different. If I say those two brands, you think of, well, I think of burgers. But if you think of McDonald's, for example, you're thinking it's all linked to the brand and marketing. It's consistency of product. It's efficiency, being able to get your product quickly. It's about real estate. Having the McDonald's stores on corner properties where it can be convenient drive-through locations. Spur also produce great burgers, but it's very different. You know, where can your kids go to play and be entertained? Where can you have a quality burger, etc.? It's about your sit-down experience, and you don't pick those differences up by looking at annual financial statements or just by looking at previous year's tax returns. You appreciate this by experiencing those products. The same as a manufacturer, to understand the differences between manufacturers and distributors and how businesses are wired, how individual businesses use value drivers differently, you only pick that up by going and meeting with the engineers of a business, in meeting with the people who are developing the intellectual property and the platforms. So you only get that true understanding of the value drivers and should it be this country or that country and to what extent those countries are benefiting from the profits in the value chain from actually spending time with the operations.
Earlier, we actually mentioned, transfer pricing can include the pricing of intangible assets that are then transferred between divisions or subsidiaries, related entities. And I'm sure this type of approach would really help when it comes to understanding IP, right? Which is quite complex. For instance, they've all got their own licensing agreements underpinning them. And if you don't understand that, you're not truly going to understand IP, right?
100%, Evan. And how is what is it that IP relates to? But also importantly, how is it being used? Because you can have IP that's being used differently by different participants. Something that we've done quite a bit of work with recently is looking at platforms. Also, how's the platform used? Is it used internally by another business? Is it a client-facing platform for other businesses? So understanding that is really important. But within the bigger picture, it's really important from a transfer pricing point of view to understand who's involved in developing the IP, who's involved in enhancing, in maintaining, in protecting, and exploiting the IP. So those five elements that we call it the DEMPE, the D-E-M-P-E, the parties that are contributing to the DEMPE, development, enhancement, maintenance, protection, and exploitation of the IP, they are the ones that should be benefiting from the IP. And sometimes it's made more complicated because with remote working, for example, every business is just trying to get the best talent, regardless of where they're based. So sometimes some of the contributions towards those DEMPE functions are performed by people in different countries. So again, it's about then evaluating who should be benefiting from this IP, but very important topic.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for walking us through this world of transfer pricing. It's certainly going to be one to watch in 2025. Thanks very much for the time.
Evan, thank you very much. It's always a great pleasure.